Ohio legalized sports betting on January 1st of 2023, and over the last year, Ohioans bet more than $7 billion on all manner of games. Sports betting's popularity is great for the companies and for the state tax base, but the downside of being able to bet on any game at any time through the ease of your cell phone is that the rate of gambling addiction is going up, and young adults, minorities, and older women are falling victim to gambling addiction. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. Today, we'll hear about the landscape of sports betting in Ohio, and we'll talk about the rise in gambling addiction with, among others, experts from organizations focused on helping gambling addicts. Later in the show, a conversation with the Cleveland International Film Festival's artistic director, Mallory Martin, about what's on deck at the festival, which starts this week. Those conversations are coming up. First, the news. It's The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Good morning, and thanks for joining us. No doubt many Ohioans are passionate about sports and their local sports teams, whether at the college level or if they're following pro teams like the Cavaliers and the Guardians. Now, it's been over a year since it became legal for Ohioans to place bets on which teams and athletes they think will be winners. Although sports betting has proven lucrative for betting and gaming companies, as Ohioans placed over $7 billion in bets since sports betting became legal last year, there have been consequences. The most recent Ohio gambling survey from 2017 to 2022 showed the numbers of Ohioans with gambling addiction tripled. And the Ohio Casino Control Commission reported over $1 million in fines for gaming companies involved with violating advertising and promotion rules. So let's talk about this. Sports betting and the rise of gambling addiction in the state. Joining me now in studio to have this conversation, Michael Bazzelli, Associate Director at the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. Michael, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much for having me.
We have Nabil Pervez, Manager of Prevention Services at Recovery Resources in Cleveland. Nabil, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And also we have Ed G, a compulsive gambler in recovery with the Area 10 Gamblers Anonymous organization. We're not using his last name in order to respect his anonymity. Ed, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
And by phone, I'm joined by Joe Messner, a licensed clinician with Anna Zhao Community Partners in Worcester. Joe specializes in gambling addiction, among other areas of mental health. Joe, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Jenny, for having us.
Of course. And we have Joe Scalzo, reporter at Crain's Cleveland, who has extensively covered sports betting in Ohio. Joe, welcome back.
Thanks, Jenny. Thanks for having me on.
And if you'd like to join the conversation or have a question for our guests, please call toll-free 866-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org, or you can tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. Joe Scalzo, I want to start with you. Can you characterize just how successful sports betting has been in Ohio since it was legalized in the beginning of last year?
I mean, it was a massive success. First month had over $1 billion wagered, and I use success obviously in terms of, but it's set up to be a top five market in the country, and it's just something that I think Ohioans were ready for, and they were just flooded with promotions and advertising in that first month, and they've kind of continued to bet big. Throughout the last, 14, 15 months.
And $7 billion, as you just mentioned, puts Ohio really in the top 10 of states that are essentially making bets on sports teams and games in the nation.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there with Pennsylvania, with New York, New Jersey, with the markets that are really, really big in this. And, it's such a big sports state. It has a wide variety of college and pro sports, and obviously there was a huge hunger for this to be done legally,
right?
And they're just meeting that need,
and that was essentially the argument, right? Like, this is happening anyways. The state could accrue a additional tax base by putting this within legal parameters.
Yeah, there's always that sense of let's give it to, a legal entity rather than that guy with the pinky ring at the end of the bar or the Russian oligarch overseas, that kind of thing. But I think, that's the argument on the one hand. On the other hand, once it becomes this accessible and this prolific, I guess, in terms of how many ways you can do it, then you're kind of building on what was probably a much, much smaller market for this.
And so, Michael, as Joe just talked about, in some respects, sports gambling, sports betting, it's ubiquitous because we all have cell phones and smartphones. So you can gamble anywhere, at any time, on any impulse. And that arises or leads to the problems and the dark side of sports betting. So let's talk about this gambling survey. Michael, the number of Ohioans facing gambling addiction from 2017 to 2022 tripled. Can you expand on those stats and tell me kind of what the face of gambling or gambling addiction looks like in Ohio now?
Yeah, well, anytime we increase access or availability, we're going to see more people involved in the behavior. And then, of course, what will follow is more folks having some of the consequences and harms associated with problem play. So having the expansion of sports betting opened up the market, as Joe said, to many more people who probably weren't involved, who wouldn't go to the black market, as it were. So I think there's absolutely silver linings, right? By legalizing it, you're seeing what the tax revenue is. But I mean, we're here in studio talking about it right now, right? So it's created much more awareness of needing prevention services, needing, licensed expert clinicians, because this is a niche addiction. It has a lot of similarities, but also has a lot of differences to other mental health conditions or addictions. So specialization is really important. But I mean, you mentioned the face. The face has changed, right? The demographics have vastly changed from what sports betting used to look like. It was absolutely male dominated. It was middle-aged dominated. Now there are all races, all genders, all ages. If you look at the helpline numbers, those have drastically fallen. 18 to 24-year-olds are calling already with concerns around their sports betting. So the face has changed, and the face is, I guess, is everyone.
And I guess when you talk about young people, whether they're in college, whether they're working straight out of high school or whatnot, and they're just trying to like make their way in life, to suddenly be concerned about having a gambling addiction, it's something that can stay with you.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned it, it's cliche, but it's at our fingertips. You mentioned you can make a bet on any impulse, and that's absolutely true, right? It could be at 2 in the afternoon, it could be 2 at night, it could be while you're at your work desk or while you're at your school desk. So it's so at our fingertips, it's so available, so accessible. And I think that's what you're seeing. People are getting involved at such a rapid pace that those consequences are coming out at a more rapid pace. And that's why we see people call in sooner. And again, I'll keep mentioning it, there's always a silver lining. People are developing consequences pretty quickly, but they're also calling sooner, right? So we're able to maybe get them help and support sooner and hopefully diminish some of those harms.
And Nabil, what are we seeing locally in Cuyahoga County when it comes to the face of sports betting and the problems that exist?
Yeah, so just like Mike said, it really is everybody. We're seeing so many folks coming in. I know from the 2022 data that we received, we are looking at higher rates of African American population, the Hispanic population coming in, looking for services, looking for help. And we at Recovery Resources on our prevention team, we go into several school districts, and we even go to our youth and to educate and to talk about, what does gambling look like when it compares to something like video gaming, right? What are we seeing there? And so to talk to them and to be able to provide some avenues for, the resources, the statewide, resources like Change the Game Ohio, is something as simple as that. And being able to have these conversations, because there's so many of even our youth that we are coming into the classroom to talk about other things like mental health and to talk about, alcohol and other drugs. And we come to them and they brag about how long they stayed up last night playing Counter-Strike.
And you're so right, because I feel like our younger generations are already primed to just be looking for that dopamine hit on their smartphones. And so that transaction then just of adding money and losing that money seems like it can be so easy to slip into. Okay, Joe Messner, since we have two Joes on the line, I have to use your last name. Joe Messner, let's talk about what a gambling addiction is and how it is different from other types of addictions. And then tell me more about the idiosyncrasies of sports betting addiction.
One of the things that I would like to note, Jenny,
of course,
is that gambling is where a person contributes larger and larger amounts of money in order to try and gain a payout that exceeds what they put in. And that compulsive piece where they're putting more and more money in is one of the defining features. But the other defining feature as well, Jenny, is that this betting can disrupt their finances, mm-hmm. their personal or family life, or their work performance, or even their mental health. And so when someone comes into our agency, Anna's out here in Wayne and Holmes County, we screen every person coming into the agency using what's called a brief biosocial gambling screen. And so we try to gain kind of a sense of, does a person gamble and at what level do they gamble? Because following that, what we try to do is to build a treatment strategy based on the intensity of their gambling and how much it's affected them.
And what are you seeing when it comes to sports betting? What are the depths of the problems that people are dealing? Are they gambling away their entire paychecks? What is that looking like?
Well, I think it looks differently for each individual client, because some of this gambling is hidden and not recognized by the larger community. A person may feel like if they're placing a bet on their phone or another avenue such as that doesn't compare going to the racetrack and betting on horses or playing bingo or something like that. And so our agency is involved in a lot of what we would call psychoeducation in the community, just to educate people on what gambling can look like and how it presents for each individual person.
Joe Scalzo, I want to ask you, what are you seeing as far as where are people making bets for these sports games, and what has your reporting shown you about the problems that people are dealing with when it comes to a gambling addiction?
Well, one of the big things I'm seeing is, you know, they have these bigger bets that they're making. They obviously, you start off with doing like, you know, more of like an over under or a point spread bet, and then you kind of gravitate to betting on maybe like the halftime score or how many three pointers someone might make as they go along, and then you have these parlay bets that you go, okay, if I get these 15 things happen, I can win, you know, $2,000 on a $5 bet or something like that. And I think what you're seeing is the bets are getting more complicated. You're going for bigger and bigger pots. And what you see on social media is people kind of bragging about when they get big wins or they get like a big pot or something like that, like that parlay bet. Hey, I got these 10 things that happened, and you never see the failures,
right?
And so it kind of becomes this cycle of oh man, everybody's winning, and then you know the headlines are, oh, Vegas lost so much money on you know the Super Bowl. Boy, you know, like, you know, you can't lose, you know. And so I think one of the things that we're not seeing is any of the consequences that are publicized, at least on social media. I mean, on you know. In the media, you see it like, you know, I'll write a story about problem gambling and things like that. But what gets perpetuated on social media is just the success and the fun of it. And, you know, and I think as you do it on your phone, you can just do it on your own. And whereas if, you know, before, if you went to a, you know, a sports book in Vegas, your friends were there and they could kind of be like, hey, you already lost $100. Maybe you should tone it down. But so much of this is done in secret. So the consequences are a little bit hidden, and so I just think that, you know, it's amazing how well these gambling companies understand human nature and how well they can market, you know, to people, and obviously it runs across a huge spectrum of the type of people that gamble, but the young people in particular are the ones that, you know, take bigger risks and maybe don't think about the consequences as they get more and more involved in this.
You're right. I see these really hot stars advertising DraftKings and all of these games. Kevin Hart, and I think even LeBron James was a front man for one of these companies. And that's very sexy for young people or people following social media and thinking like, hey, it's legitimized. It's hot. It's, you know, it's okay. And not to demonize, you know, it entirely, because for some people maybe who have a handle on it and it's fun and you can do what you want. But, you know, for people who kind of it goes out of control, it is problematic. I'd like to spend a couple of minutes with Ed G, who is a compulsive gambler in recovery with the Area 10 Gamblers Anonymous organization. Ed, I want to ask you how you fell into gambling addiction.
Slowly and insidiously. It all started off from normal fun and games, playing for pennies with grandma, a Rummy Royal, and things along those lines. When I was growing up, I wasn't very good at sports. In fact, the team that got me at the end tried to give me to the other team for the advantage. So I was constantly searching for something that I was good at. And it turned out that things like playing poker and things like that, I was pretty good at. There I found my social acceptance. And gradually over a period of time, okay, that developed into an obsession.
And tell me kind of when you hit your low point.
My low point was the day I decided to investigate Gamblers Anonymous was I was playing in the 2008 World Series of Poker. And I was out in the break room or break area over at the Rio, and I was talking with an A-lister, professional player.
Sure.
And he was the one who actually got me into this, because I was there during the break complaining to him about how my family was complaining about the time I spent and stuff like that, because my goal was to win a bracelet. That's...
Yeah.
And how things were being stressed at home.
And it had reached that level.
It had reached that. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. It had reached that level. And he looked at me and he says, listen, you think those bracelets are an achievement? Let me tell you about how I got my six bracelets. Oh. And he, in turn, started telling me about his life, his problems and things along those lines, and it totally busted my bubble as to the delusion of what it's like to be an A-list or professional player.
And how that you might aspire to have that goal of six bracelets, like you're never going to get enough.
Right.
So let me ask you this. When you're in recovery now.
Yes.
How hard is it? Or how easy is it?
You know, that's a good question, because... for me, okay, compulsive gambling had a lot of emotional attachments to it, okay? A lot of ways of thinking and living that were counterproductive to my actual goals. And I had to reassess my goals. Life goals, right. I had to reassess who my quote-unquote higher power is, okay? Because while my lips were professing one higher power, okay, all my waking moments, all my money, all my time, all everything else was devoted to mistress gambling.
Okay. So when you see these apps, when you see the commercials, and you see the ubiquitous nature of sports betting now in Ohio, I mean, what does that say to you? Does it raise red flags?
I see potentials for problems. However, I want to make this perfectly clear, okay? Us compulsive gamblers in recovery recognize gambling for what it is a form of entertainment that some of us develop an allergy to.
Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. Yeah, Michael?
Well, yeah, and I'm glad Ed went there because I was going to say, you know, my organization, the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio, Nabil and Recovery Resources and the state of Ohio and our funders are not anti-gambling. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier, as Ed has, a lot of people can do this for fun and games and it stops there. But I think where more of the concern lies is how much the landscape has changed, right? You used to make a sports bet and you would wait 4 hours and see if that one sports bet won or lost. It has completely changed now with propositional bets. We're betting on individual elements of specific games, individual players and their individual performances. We know that with baseball, there's a pitch clock now. There has to be a pitch every 15 seconds. You can bet on every single pitch.
Wow.
Ball, strike, ball, strike. Your average slot machine, a turn is 20 seconds, and we used to think that was very rapid. This is now more rapid than that, right? So, and, you know, you mentioned the celebrities, how they really push it and advertise it, and that makes it very appealing. A lot of these operators claim that they have very strong responsibilities and priorities of responsible gambling. So we've challenged them to do that then. Kevin Hart has, you know, a promotional ad for his company every 90 seconds. Why don't we also have Kevin Hart do a commercial on But Stay Within Your Limits?
Right.
And Peyton Manning and all these other celebrities who do that. So if there is truly a commitment to responsible gambling, why not have, you know, I'm throwing numbers out there, but 1 in 10 ads is one specific to responsible gambling and staying within your limits. And we are seeing that change because a lot of these companies have gambling responsible specific tools within their applications that they have their players go to. And there's also a lot of research that shows of the sports bettors who do set limits inside of these applications actually stay within their limits. They do set time limits, monetary limits, and stay within that. And then on the actual, you know, regulatory side, we've seen that Ohio banned propositional bets on college athletes recently, which I think is a phenomenal thing because there's enough pressure and stress of being a college student. Then there's an additional one being a student athlete, which I was, and I understand that. And now these individual student athletes have people betting on them.
And then harassing them online.
And then harassing them online, and you see it professionally too. That's the crazy. Cavaliers coach came out and said he gets threats. So having the propositional individual bet is so much different. It doesn't seem like it maybe at first, but it's so much different than just betting on winning and losing for a team. And so we've taken that step to ban that, which is great because, you know, think about it. 18, 19, 20-year-olds aren't old enough to bet themselves, but we've permitted them to be bet upon. That is a immense responsibility that they feel like they have to shoulder to perform just so someone else, maybe another student at their campus, can make some money. So steps are being taken on the regulation and operation side to try to put some more safeguards in.
Okay, let's take a quick break. And on the other side, we will return with this conversation about sports betting and then the rise in gambling addiction. I'm Jenny Hamill. This is The Sound of Ideas. We'll be right back. This is The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks for staying with us as we talk about sports betting in Ohio and the dark side, which is the rise of gambling addiction in the state as well. I'm joined by Michael Bazzelli with the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio, Nabil Pervez, Manager of Prevention Services at Recovery Resources, Edgy, a compulsive gambler in recovery, and then Joe Messner with the Anna Zhao Community Partners in Worcester, and of course, Joe Scalzo, reporter at Cranes Cleveland. I want to read a quick email from Thomas, a listener, who says, I find the proliferation of advertising for sports gambling in our media to be disgusting. With the negative, addictive nature of gambling, maybe we should be limiting it, at least in advertising, like we limit cigarette advertising. And as Michael just spoke to, you know, are there enough efforts to kind of hedge at least this picture that's being painted of the sexiness of sports betting with all the advertising we have? So, Nabil, I'd love to know from you in Cuyahoga County, kind of what are some of the local tools or educational services that you're giving your clients in order to help with, you know, a potential gambling addiction?
Yeah, so we definitely utilize at the state level, there was a couple programs created, Pause Before You Play, Change the Game Ohio. You know, these tools, Change the Game Ohio is a tool designed for youth gaming and gambling. Pause Before You Play, you know, as the name kind of says, right? Pause before you play. Pause
sure.
before you take that bet or place that bet. And so some of the things that we've even done on a local level, we recently recovered resources with some of the dollars that we received from the state. We used it to try and create more of a campaign, marketing campaign around let's talk, right? If you are someone who is struggling with gambling, know someone who's struggling, you can give us a call. You know, we're more than happy to talk and to listen. And even before this campaign was created, for years I was getting calls. I would get calls from family members saying, should we do you know, some type of intervention?
Sure.
And I'm like, no, don't do the intervention, but let's talk about these things. Let's talk about what can you do? How can you further support your friend or family member? So there's lots of those types of tools that are readily available for folks in Cuyahoga County as well as the rest of the state. You know, we also have the Cuyahoga Problem Gambling Coalition. So that is a coalition, one of the longest lasting gambling specific coalitions in the state of Ohio, who actually Mike was our original founder of the coalition, and I was able to take over. And this coalition is open to anyone in the community who just feels passionate about wanting to put a stop to problem gambling, to help further the education. And of course, it's also open to any professionals, clinical professionals, prevention specialists, anybody who is interested in participating and really trying to make an impact, you know, on the problem gambling space in Cuyahoga County.
And Joe Messner in Worcester, what is your treatment process for clients that might be dealing with this specific niche, as Michael described it, of a addiction?
Yes, Jenny. One of the things that we do as an agency, we get money from our United Way and from our Mental Health and Recovery Board in Wayne and Holmes County here. And we screen every client coming into our agency for gambling problems. And what that does is it starts to set us up to know where a person is with their gambling. And then during the course of an assessment, we look at what's called a stage of change model, where we see if someone is pre-contemplative and has no interest in changing, or are they contemplating and preparing, or are they in an action stage? And so what we tend to do, Jenny, is then target our therapeutic approaches based on where they're at. If a person is more in a contemplative stage of change, or even a beginning preparation of change, we'll work on a lot of harm reduction techniques. And as I think it was Michael who mentioned that more on a social level, where you look maybe look at media and reducing the harm based on advertising, we would do it on an individual basis and working with a person, limiting the amount that they're betting or limiting the time that they're betting. And then in when it becomes a more compulsive issue, such as what Ed was talking about, we've got a variety of therapeutic approaches that we could use. We can do referral into some 12-step programming. We could look at a cognitive behavioral approach. Ed had mentioned that he's addressed his emotional attachments. And if you want to address some of those emotional attachments, you look at how you think and you look at your values underneath those in order to create change. Ultimately, what you're going to do when you hit a level of compulsive gambling and a person's motivation is high, you're going to start to build a relapse prevention program that looks at your triggers and how you respond to those triggers.
Michael, you wanted to add?
Yeah, and I think there's some really specific and, like we've said, kind of niche strategies and things that clinicians need to know about and be prepared for, and Ed can comment as well, but one is kind of that, you know, Ed called it burst in his bubble, but oftentimes people kind of live within some of what we would call distorted thinking. So these can be misconceptions of odds or the games they're playing, but also that they have maybe a power or a knowledge or a skill over a game that is in fact chance-based. So really there's no skill there, right? Then there's, of course, the financial component. I mean, we're talking about incredible sums of money because people can borrow, they can maybe steal, or they can take out credits and loans, you know, mortgage the house, sell the car. There's ways to get immense sums of money that then you can fall behind on. So that, you know, having some, not financial coaching, I don't want to go that far, but, you know, clinicians having this ability to have some of these conversations around budgeting and stuff that doesn't usually happen in other forms of therapy. And then lastly is the suicidality piece. So gambling disorder has the highest suicide attempt rate of any addiction at about 1 in 5. So if you're looking at, right, a group of 10 individuals in treatment for gambling disorder, or maybe they're in a Gamblers Anonymous group, 2 of them have possibly attempted suicide. So you're talking about a whole nother connection or issue that needs to be addressed and that, again, people need to feel comfortable with. Oftentimes we're not comfortable talking about lethality. We're also not comfortable talking about finances, but these are 2 really big components to gambling therapy.
Joe Scalzo, I want to know what, from your vantage point, is being done on the state level when it comes to kind of acknowledging the landscape of what sports betting now looks like in Ohio and the problems and the addiction that comes with it. What is the state doing that seems effective in responding to that?
Well, it was, you know, mentioned earlier, they're kind of ahead of the game on banning college prop bets, which is I want to say one thing. We had just saw something involving a Toronto Raptors player that maybe he had been kind of working with gamblers or there might be a scandal there. And so that not only takes the pressure off of college students who feel like responsible for bets, but it also takes away a little bit of temptation to say, oh man, the prediction is that I'll have 10 points tonight. Well, if I only score 8, then I can make some money there. So we're seeing, we're seeing Ohio kind of take the lead on some things. Matt Schuler, who is the regulator for Ohio, has been active in banning people who maybe have like shady bets. I think there was a coach for Alabama baseball who got banned for like so in-five information. You're seeing him take on advertising and the gambling companies for not including the promotion or the risk-free or advertising the risk-free bets or the free bets and their promotions not including like the information that you need to have to if you're having a problem betting problem and you know he's kind of been called a rock star regulator because you know he's not afraid to take on these gambling companies. So many states have been kind of like kowtowing to them or they just kind of look the other way, and so I think what we're seeing is when there is a problem they're addressing it quickly, they're adding a new rule, and you know again it comes back to the idea that this is something that people want in Ohio. They think it's fun. And I think they've been very proactive about taking away the worst parts of gambling. And I think they're always just kind of looking to be a little bit more flexible and a little lighter on their feet than some other states are. When they see a problem, address it, fix it, and then, you know, kind of serve as a model for some other states.
Ed, I want to turn back to you. You're our recovering gambling expert. You've had a gambling addiction that you're recovering from. I'm wondering if you're seeing these new faces of what a new face of a gambling addiction might look like and what your approach to new members might be.
We do see a whole change of demographics of people coming in. It used to be, like they says, not too long ago, it was the pari-mutuel bettors coming in, and then the casinos opened up, and then all of a sudden we started seeing table game people coming in a little bit more. Then the slot machines got a lot more enveloping, and then we started seeing more people like women come in, okay? Yeah. And now with the legalization of sports betting, we're seeing a lot, and this is the scary part, we're seeing a lot of younger people as young as 14
Yikes.
Coming in to our rooms.
And what's your approach with them? I mean, how do you try to greet them? Or you know, I'm sure it's a hard process to begin.
There are a lot of questions and with dealing with young people. We have two types of meetings. We call them open and closed meetings, where an open meeting is where a support system, like a parent or something like that, could attend and, you know, just sit in the room, which are quite helpful in that. But the ones where we're concerned with is the closed meetings, where the minor child who is wants to talk without their parents listening to what they have to say. Those are the kind of tricky. In fact, that's one of our agenda items at our next conference coming up in California in May.
All right. So I'm being told we're already running out of time. I would just love to know if maybe Michael or Ed, when do you recognize when you have a problem? Why don't I let Ed start with that? I mean, what would you tell the people out there who are going, do I have an issue?
Good question. Go to gamblersanonymous.org. There's a thing there called 20 yes or no questions. It's not pass or fail. Go read the 20 questions and answer them honestly to yourself. It's a pretty good gauge whether or not you have a problem or you may be heading towards a problem.
And what would you say in addition? Like, is there no shame to that, right? To get to the truth and try to help yourself.
There is no shame in catching what we consider a disease, a very deadly disease that ultimately leads to prison, insanity, or death untreated. There's no shame in getting help for a disease. Where the shame rests is when you recognize you have a disease and do nothing about it.
Ed G., compulsive gambler in recovery with Area 10 Gamblers Anonymous Organization. Thank you so much. Michael Bozzelli, Associate Director of the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. Nabil Pervez, Manager of Prevention Services at Recovery Resources in Cleveland. Joe Messner, Licensed Clinician with Anna Zhao Community Partners in Worcester. And Joe Scalzo, Reporter at Cranes Cleveland. Thank you all so much for this excellent and really informative conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you for having us.
Time now for a quick break. This is The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. We'll be right back. You're with The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks for being with us this hour. The Cleveland International Film Festival is about to get underway in Playhouse Square this week. The 48th annual festival opens Wednesday night with a comedy, Thelma, about a 93-year-old determined to recoup her money after she was scammed. The festival runs in person through April 13th and then moves online with 8 days of streaming films. More than 100 feature-length films and more than 200 shorts will screen. We have a preview now of some of the many films showing as the festival's artistic director, Mallory Martin, spoke with IdeaStream's deputy editor of arts and culture, Carrie Wise.
The festival is coming at a time when all kinds of things are happening in Cleveland. All the attention certainly going into the eclipse. There's also the Guardians home opener and the NCAA women's tournament. How are you feeling going into this festival with all that's going on?
So I will be honest and say that it's probably been one of our more challenging years because of everything happening in downtown Cleveland, but it's also really exciting for our city and for our event to be happening at the same time. But there was a point earlier in the year where we thought, okay, maybe do we need to change our dates because of everything that's happening? And ultimately we decided, no, we were going to, you know, lean in to everything that was going to be happening, all the hopefully, you know, new people that are going to be in our city and have time to stop by and hang out at a film festival too. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be crazy for sure. But, you know, it's an exciting time for our city, I think.
Well, one of the ways you seem to be leaning in is with all of the sports films scheduled, boxing, basketball, track and field. All you hear is noise. That's one of the sports films. So there's a wide range, but I understand that film has LeBron ties. Talk a bit about that film.
Yeah, so All You Hear Is Noise is a documentary. It's executive produced by LeBron James. It's also from some of the same members who have had films in our festival before, especially around topics of people with disabilities. So Becoming Bulletproof was a film that we had years ago that was an award winner, and some of the same crew are involved in this film as well. It's directed by Ned Castle, Matt Day. Ned will be in town, as well as the three subjects who are featured in the film. So Chris, Mel, and Trent will all be here. They are three athletes with intellectual disabilities who, in the film, you see them compete at the 2019 Special Olympics game, which actually was the first ever triathlon. And I think it was the first one that was in the Middle East in Abu Dhabi. And it's a great film because it not only, you know, it has all the elements of a good sports documentary, I think, but also it really focuses on these three individuals and also them coming back home to deal with a world that doesn't prioritize their needs. So we're really excited to have that film happening over the first weekend of the festival when there'll be a lot of people in town who are interested in sports too.
Definitely. There's always films that have Ohio ties. And two docs this year are telling stories about musical groups from Akron, Devo and the Black Keys. How much of Akron would you say is in these films?
Oh, a ton.
Okay.
Quite a bit. I'm from Akron myself, too. So I think, especially with this is a film about the Black Keys documentary, because it spans pretty much their whole career. So back when they started in 2001 in Akron, you know, all the way through now, and they're, you know, the peak of their success. And now they're kind of, you know, middle-aged guys who are dads. But there's so much footage of Akron. And it was really cool to see, especially shots of like downtown Akron, or even some concert venues that aren't there anymore. So people, I think in Cleveland, but definitely in Akron, will recognize quite a bit from that film. And same thing with Devo. So that film, we're so happy to have as our closing night film too. It's the film itself is as fun as the band, I think. And I found myself when I was watching it at Sundance, dancing in my seat. So I hope everybody will do the same.
Fun. Another film that has an Ohio tie is Dandelion. This is a drama. It's following a struggling singer-songwriter from Cincinnati. And it's directed by Nicole Riegel. She's from Ohio, and she's a returning filmmaker to SIFF. What can you tell us about Dandelion?
So it's funny because Nicole's first film, Holler, which played at the 45th Cleveland International Film Festival, was during one of our virtual years. So she actually was not able to come in person. So we're very happy that she will be able to do so this year with her next film, Dandelion, which just had its world premiere, I believe, at South by Southwest Film Festival. And this is another film that I think really has Nicole's sort of signature mark on it in terms of a quiet kind of indie drama that really, you know, sticks with you after watching it. So this film is starring Kiki Layne, who was in If Beale Street Could Talk. Some people might recognize her from there. And she does an amazing job in this film. And she plays a struggling musician from Cincinnati who leaves home to set out and follow her dreams. And she ends up in South Dakota, where she ends up meeting and falling for another musician there. So it's a really beautiful, quiet film. And I'm excited to finally have Nicole here to talk about her filmmaking.
There's another film with local ties called American Delivery. This one's about nurses who are fighting for maternal health in Cleveland, Dayton. What did you learn from this one?
I think more people now will know, I would say, like the disaster situation that's happening around maternal mortality rates in the U.S. and the fact that, you know, we have one of the highest rates of that, more so than any wealthy nation, especially for women of color. They might have seen headlines about that, but this film not only is told from a lot of the women in particular who are on the ground and facing this, so nurses, midwives, other medical professionals, so you get their perspective, but it also just gives a really humanistic viewpoint of what those headlines actually mean. And the focus is on specifically Cleveland's Metro Health system, and then as well as talking with some medical professionals in Dayton. We'll have the world premiere of that film on April 6th at 7:30. And then there's a second screening that next morning on April 7th. And we'll have an extended panel right after that one. And that's what's going to be with Metro Health. And then also First Year Cleveland, which is a really great organization that's local, doing the work around maternal mortality rates and hoping to make that better.
Film Festival is certainly known for putting a lot of topical films in front of viewers and bringing perspectives from around the world. There's Porcelain War this year, and in this case, the story shows how art can be helpful in difficult times. Tell us more about this one.
It won the U.S. Documentary Grand Jury Prize at Sundance, which is where I saw the film. And this is, you know, year two of us having a Ukrainian cinema sidebar at CIF. Many people might have just watched the Oscars and saw 20 Days in Mariupol, which was a documentary, a Ukrainian documentary we had last year at the festival. It won our standing up documentary competition, just won the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature this year, which was really amazing to see. And the director had a great acceptance speech as well, reminding people that this war is continuing in Ukraine and there are still people there trying to survive. So this new film, Porcelain War, follows the perspective of three artists in particular who are still there. Two of those artists will be at the festival along with their dog Frodo, who's also in the film. And one of the subjects is also one of the directors. Both directors will be here. Most of the film is shot by the subjects themselves. This film is, you know, it's a tough watch in some ways to see how devastated their country has become, but also it's a really, you know, humanistic look at people not giving up, and especially when it comes to art, helping them get through it. I think that's the difference with our sidebar this year and focus on Ukrainian film is, you know, rather than just focusing on the invasion itself, which was fairly new last year, it's now focusing on the people, you know, the victims and the people who are still surviving there.
Another heavy topic that's explored through another film, another documentary, is Sugarcane. This doc looking at the abuse of Indigenous children at a boarding school in Canada. Can you talk a bit about Sugarcane and how this film approaches such a difficult topic?
Yeah, absolutely. This is another film that I saw at Sundance. It also won their U.S. Documentary Directing Award. So this is a tough but really beautiful film, I have to say. It is about traumatic issues surrounding, you know, the horrors of what happened at these Indian residential schools, specifically at one school, St. Joseph Mission in British Columbia. So it not only, you know, we'll talk about the initial forced removal of Indigenous children from their homes, requiring them to adapt new language, new religion, which is in and of itself awful to every definition of that. But it's also, you know, it talks about the generations of physical and actually sexual abuse that was happening at these schools. However, even though it exposes some of that and starts as an investigatory, a film that's really an investigation of this, it focuses more on the victims and how, you know, the systemic abuse has impacted them intergenerationally. So the fact that this happened years ago and has affected not only the victims themselves who suffered through that, but also, you know, how that's devastated these communities, especially around addiction, trauma that has, you know, trickled down into their children and their families, and about whether or not there's ever going to be any restitution for these victims. So it's very powerful. We will have, there's two screenings of this film on April 6th and 7th. And then on the 7th, the morning screening right after that, we'll be holding a panel discussion, which is hosted by Lake Erie Native American Council, which we're excited for their involvement with this film for sure.
Definitely. Now it's your job to watch all these films before the festival. Is there one that you're looking forward to re-watching this year?
That's a good question. I'm really excited to be able to sort of re-watch our opening night film, Thelma, with our audience. It's so fun. I think that's going to be a great one just to see the audience reaction for, and a good one to, you know, lead into a party afterwards. I also have to call out Ghostlight, which is another drama, sort of dramedy, that I saw at Sundance, which will be at the festival this year, which is about a family, really, but specifically a construction worker father who's had some family trauma, and he ends up joining a community theater production of Romeo and Juliet to help process that, and he's a very unlikely character for that. It's hilarious. It's sad. It's everything that's kind of wrapped up within one movie that anybody that watches will never be able to forget that film, I think. So that's one I'm really excited to share with our audience for sure.
Unforgettable film.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Thanks so much for taking time to preview a few films.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Carrie.
That was Mallory Martin, Artistic Director of the Cleveland International Film Festival, in conversation with IdeaStream's Carrie Wise. The festival takes place in Playhouse Square from Wednesday until April 13th. After that, the screenings move online for another 8 days of streaming. And that wraps it up for our show. To get the last word on today's topics, you can send an email to soi@ideastream.org. We are on Twitter, now X, at Sound of Ideas. You can follow me at JennyHamill_, or you can follow me on Instagram at JennyHamillIdeaStream. We did have an email regarding our conversation about sports betting in Ohio and the rise of gambling addictions. Wendy wrote in, "I've had a family that's had compulsive gamblers on both sides, and we saw lives damaged or destroyed by this. Unfortunately, it's not really recognized by many people as an addiction because it doesn't carry the social stigma of other forms of addiction. Legal online sports gambling is a terrible, constant temptation for too many people." And we had another email from Richard, who wondered if placing a minimum bid on sports would help the addiction problem, like placing a bet on their phone. Rather, at $5, you could make the minimum $100, for example, he writes, saying that traditional illegal bookies would have minimum bets and would not bother with small bets. So he's just posturing if that would make the situation better. And of course, we appreciate your emails. We appreciate you listening. Tomorrow on The Sound of Ideas, we discuss eclipse safety. We'll get advice on how to safely view the celestial event. If you missed any portion of the program, find us online or listen to The Sound of Ideas podcast. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for listening. We'll speak with you again tomorrow.